Hello, dear Seeking Office listeners. This is Alex DeBoer. I'm not really making this podcast anymore because I don't get paid to make it, and so I can't keep doing it because I need to work on other projects that pay me. But I love local news, and sometimes I might throw up an interview or a piece on this feed. Who knows? Anyway, today I interviewed Eric Fredrickson.
I'm the head of public art and cultural services at the City of Vancouver.
You may have heard of the Spinning Chandelier, which is a new public art installation located under the Granville Street Bridge. It was funded by West Bank, a luxury condo developer. And it's been getting a lot of media attention.
The chandelier officially unveiled Wednesday night. It's designed by world-renowned local artist Rodney Graham.
Beautiful, beautiful piece. We're excited to be here this evening.
The fixture is complete with LED lights.
So as you can hear, some people think this chandelier is beautiful. Others have described it as Versailles-like, tone-deaf, pretty, f***ing ugly. Really, there's a lot of perspectives out there, and I am not here to tell you what is art. You can decide for yourself. What I find most interesting about this public artwork isn't whether or not it's successful as art, but the questions it raises about public art more broadly, such as how are public art projects approved, and what kind of public consultation is involved. We know with the Spinning Chandelier, West Bank commissioned this $4.8 million public art project as part of its Vancouver House, which is a 52-story residential tower. So I assumed West Bank was required to build a piece of public art as part of a community amenity contribution for the rezoning that took place in order to build the Vancouver House.
It's not technically a community amenity contribution.
That's Eric Fredrickson again.
So those are negotiated between the city and developers, and those could be in kind if they're delivering a daycare center or a school or a park.
So public art is a separate thing. It's not part of CACs or community development contributions. Instead, Eric says, it's a set formula that's applied to large-scale redevelopments.
If you're building over 100,000 square feet in a rezoning, and it's not non-market housing, social housing is exempted, but all other uses are not. And that's just a set amount. It's currently $1.98 a square foot of public art.
Okay.
Worth of public art.
Okay, thanks. These private development-funded art projects are one of the two major ways public art is created in Vancouver. The other way is probably in line with how you would assume public art is created, which is when the city itself commissions public art, which reflects civic priorities. But actually, when I asked Eric for the numbers on how much public art is created by developers versus how much public art is commissioned by the city, I was surprised at what I heard.
Yeah, I can't give you real useful numbers on that. It's hard to track in any sort of disciplined way because the time frames are so long. Like in the case of Spinning Chandelier, the obligation was incurred back in, I think, 2014, and the project is delivered in 2019. I'd say there's more work. There's clearly more work that happens through private development than happens through the civic program.
Okay, interesting. To reiterate, there's more public art commissioned through private developers than by the city itself. So what does that mean? If private developers are commissioning all this public art in our city, what mechanisms are in place to ensure that the art is appropriate or tasteful or liked by the people of Vancouver? I learned from the city's website that developers who are required to build public art have a few boxes to tick.
When a developer is bringing a project for rezoning, they will hire an art consultant. The consultant will write a plan, and the plan is typically reviewed by the Public Art Committee.
The Public Art Committee. This is the group that developers and their consultants send their public art plans to for review. So it's at least one mechanism of accountability. I asked Eric to tell me more about the committee. You said it's appointed by council. Like, who's on it? How are the people appointed?
There's an application process. It actually just closed for the terms that will start at the end of the year. So the committee is something that was established by bylaw in 1991, I believe, and it has a fairly...
Eric tells me that the Public Art Committee is made up of two artists of recognized standing in the art community, three art professionals, two urban designers, one developer, and one member of the general public. Now, it's important to note that the Public Art Committee doesn't vet the artist or the art project put forward by a developer. They just review the planning that's involved in making that artwork happen. So essentially, the committee doesn't have very much power over what art is getting made. And that leaves me to wonder, what meaningful input do either the city's elected officials or the public have on developer-commissioned public art projects? I asked how this worked in the case of the spinning chandelier.
So that's really, like, Public Art Committee is meant to be direct oversight of how projects are being planned rather than, you know, community consultation.
Right.
Because they make recommendations directly to council.
Yeah, I understand. So council appoints the members of the Public Art Committee. But then in terms of public consultation, how did that work? Was there direct public consultation, or was it just the Public Art Committee reviewing the plans?
Yeah, more that. I'm not sure what level of consultation happened and whether it was part of the development generally.
So Eric wasn't around when the chandelier project began 4 or 5 years ago, but there likely wasn't any direct public consultation. He said that sometimes in areas of the city that have a strong cultural community or an area that is actively developing its sense of identity, the city will ask for input from the public, though they aren't required to.
There's no sort of structured, this is how consultation and how engagement should work on public art projects.
Right, and with this one in particular, the city didn't recommend working with a specific nation or anything. They didn't highlight any specific needs of that neighborhood that needed to be addressed, like
not
in
that
terms
I know
of which artist or yeah.
Yeah, this was in 2014,
yeah, it was
most
a bit
likely,
before
so
your
I'm
time.
Not yeah.
Okay, and then the Public Art Committee, you said it's appointed by council. So to recap, we now know that more public art in Vancouver is commissioned by developers as a requirement in large-scale rezoning projects than by the city itself. And oversight largely comes down to a public art committee, which is appointed by council. But even this committee only has power over the art project planning, not who the artist is or what the artwork is. And with that in mind, we return to the spinning chandelier. So for the spinning chandelier, there's been quite a few different opinions on it. The mayor is quoted describing the chandelier as the most important piece of public art in the history of our city, while a headline from Vice predicts it'll start a class war. So I'm wondering, why do you think this piece of art is so divisive?
I think when you're doing a project that is scaled physically at this size and has the budget that it has and is in the form of a massive chandelier, it wasn't a surprise to us that it generated really strong responses. It's something that, you know, has been underway for years and years, obviously, and then it lands at the time that it lands. And it's not to say that 5 years ago, a lot of the concerns that people have in the city weren't also present, but they are at a particular level currently, and you know that this steps into. And so, I think that we were expecting that there would be a lot of response to the work, and that the response would be, you know, there would be a lot of different sort of responses, including really strong responses about the nature of the work and its budget and its location.
Right. You mean, yeah, like in light of, you know, the housing crisis and the opioid crisis and stuff?
Right. Yeah. And I think it's something that will happen with public art generally. I think there's huge value in taking the work of artists and having it be in the public realm, not just reserving it for commercial galleries or for museums. But it will always create tensions around cost, basically.
A lot of people think the $5 million put towards this public art project is too much. But Eric says the cost of public art is always contentious. And you can usually make the argument that the money put into public art could be better used towards another public good.
If I said, I recommend let's shut down the public art program for a year or for 5 years, there isn't something that says, oh, that amount of money was money that the developer just broadly owed to the city and that we can then take and use for whatever we want. That was something that developers agreed with, something that benefited the city, but also benefited themselves in a way,
right,
because, you know, it adds value to the neighborhood that their projects are in as well. So again, it's not that you can see it as a levy that we could just decide tomorrow that money is going to buy things other than public art.
Right, but the city could change that.
I don't think they could unilaterally, is what I'm trying to say. It's not something that that we just could say, now you need to pay us $1.98 a square foot and we're going to spend it on
libraries
or housing.
It. Eric brings up the dependent relationship the city has with developers. How the city can't just tell developers what to do, because not only do we rely on them to build housing in Vancouver, we rely on developers to help build new schools, new parks, childcare centers, a variety of amenities, all through community amenity contributions. But I guess like the concern I have is that, as you said, there's more public art created by developers than by the city itself. And with like such a limited public consultation, I find it troubling that we have developers, like these for-profit companies, sort of creating culture in our city. Do you find that troubling at all?
I see what you're saying, certainly. I think that negotiation is sort of built into the way the city has been operating, and it's something that I think people are interested in taking a look at, whether rezonings are the only way to work to add, you know, housing or to add space to the city, whether there's other ways.
It's important to note, Eric says, that rezonings, which are the reason developers are required to commission public art, those rezonings do go to a public hearing. So people can speak to council directly about that rezoning project, but they won't really have any say in any required public artwork that the developer commissions. And this is kind of just the way things work in Vancouver. Like housing and amenities, developers have a lot of control over public art and subsequently over culture. Thank you very much for speaking with me, Eric.
You're welcome. Thanks for your questions.
Thank you for listening. This piece was made by me, Alex DeBoer. The music you heard was Entwined Oddity and Thorough Put by Blue Dot Sessions. This audio was recorded and produced on the unceded traditional and ancestral territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.